This is actually a water meter that this hive came out of. That's the traditional Langstroth. That's the traditional base, screen, bottom board, your regular frames that you see here. And then you put the telescoping lid over the top. And again, that's basically that setup. This is flow, that's top comb. And so I'm trying different varieties, different types of hives, because I want to be able to experience and inform people as best I can with whatever they might have been dealing with. That typical frame, this is, okay, you see this right here? You see those peanuts? Those are swarm cells. So remember we were talking earlier about you can divide off the hive, and I would cut out one of these. Well, this one's small, this one's not. And if I had a known queen in here that was laying good anyway, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to cut both of these out from a distance out and across. And granted, yes, you're going to kill some larvae doing this. And I would take those and I'd put them in a different box and put them on the top of a frame. And the likelihood is I would put both of these on two different frames as well. So that way you have twice the chance of having a queen be built, and I would make sure that the queen didn't go to the new box when I moved it.
But you will have migration of
bees. Yes. And so this is, when you get in there, and that's what this picture is here, that's literally what you're looking at when you open up a hive. You know, and when you start pulling out the frames and you're looking at something like this and like this, you're looking at thousands and thousands of bees that, yes, they can sting you. And yes, it would hurt, you know. But that is the honey ready to go right there. This is another type of hive which is becoming more and more popular right now. And it's a horizontal hive. It's using these frames right here rather than the top bar frames. And you can build it longer and still have that same divider like you do with your top bar hive, so that you can make this hive whatever length across here you want it to be. And that's becoming very popular, and I'm actually wanting to build one of these. I just haven't done it yet. It's actually a pretty nice idea, and especially as you get older, you don't have to lift honey supers that can weigh 100 pounds. And most of what I'm using is deeps. So 10 frame deep of honey, you're talking a lot of weight. So this is basically what it would look like inside without the inner cover in there. So you would put the inner cover in where you can feed them. Then this is the flow hive, and you can probably see these little lines. That's where they've taken the plastic cells and they have joined them together so that they can fill it. And that's the first step to being used in there. And, oh, okay, I was thinking that was the video one. It's not. This is a queen excluder. That is an essential part of that particular system because you don't want the queen laying up here, which I have had that happen before, where a queen got up into the top and my whole system that I spent a fortune on became a brood box. And it's like, okay, so you get the queen back in the bottom and deal with it. And this is, in a sense, how that system works. You can see these are all, and why they didn't build this to be the correct orientation, I don't know. I'm sure it has to do with the physics of building it and stuff like that, because technically these should be turned, where the point, this should be the bottom like this, you know, so that the point, actually it would be like this, because those points should be at the very bottom. But then when they open it up, it'll just flow down and out the back. And I can tell you, it does work. And this, I was afraid that was going to happen. That's the difference between using my computer and this one. But you can kind of see, sorry, but it's squished. But this is supposed to be that way and nice and long. And this is literally just flowing down out of it. Yeah, yeah. If you were to turn it this way and stretch it back out again, I don't... Yeah, yeah, this is a quart jar. But this is, you know, you can see the foam that's here. That's the most foam that I deal with when I do this system. That one is the flow hive. Yeah, this is the key that's sticking up out of it. Okay, so there's one of, and this is where I'm glad I was able to get this over here while the power was out. This is the extractor, and you can see how the comb sits in there. This is a three-frame extractor, which that looks pretty big for a three-frame, but that's all it'll hold because of the way they hold it in there. And that's available through Dedent, which a lot of this equipment that you can get is. The upside is you can do it quickly. You can do a huge amount in hardly any time at all. And if you have a short amount of time to work with, there you go. The downside is you have to store the equipment. Granted, the bees will clean it for you. But, you know, still, the honey is being oxidized through this whole process. Because every time you move it, every time you whatever, you're actually oxidizing it more and more. And you're going to find that it's going to have more and more potential of having contaminants and various things in it. But this is the biggest problem that I found. This is the 5-gallon bucket. There's nothing wrong with this. That's normal. You can take it off, you can scrape it off, but actually I scraped off some and put it in a container, and when I came back an hour later, most of it was honey again. And so, I mean, it's not like, it just doesn't look so great. But you can see when I bottled up Monday night, that's what I was dealing with. Now, I do have these bottles. Some of them are some of my extra honey that I have over there. And you can see now that there's only a few little bubbles at the very top. But still, it's just it is what it is. That's why when you use this method, you have to give it so long before you put it into a show. Because if you have any bubbles, any foam, you're out. They don't even look at it. Let's see. Okay. The method that I used, that's what it was. Remember I talked about turning the frame upside down? That's the method that I'm pretty much using. Here's just to give you an idea of some different things people have done with hives or for hives. All sorts of weird things you can do. This gives you an idea of the different bees. It's not a real picture, obviously, but the worker's lifespan, 22 to 42 days. Drones, about 90 days, unless it's mating. Then it dies that day. The queen, 2 to 7 years. The bee's life, one bee will make 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey. We spoke about that and the fact that all the workers were females. This is kind of like just to give you a rough idea of their method, their jobs in the hive. They start with cleaning, then they go to nursing, then aid, then wax, airflow, become a guard bee, and then they are a forager until they die. And here is a nice, pretty nice photo of the queen. She's actually right up here, if you didn't notice her. When you pull out your hives, your combs, the first thing that you usually do is you have your box across here with, let's say, 10 frames in it. Go all the way to one side or the other and pull out one frame first, all the way at the edge. Pull it out carefully and get it out of the way. Make sure the queen's not on it, which usually she's not on the sides. Doesn't mean she's not, because she will. But just double check it. If she's not on it, put it to the side. Then take the next hive, move it over, and bring it up. And do that with every other frame when you're looking at it. Be very careful because you don't want to roll the queen. If you start rolling her, and when hives are touching each other coming in and out, you can end up killing her. And then you have a whole different problem you have to deal with. So play it safe, pull one out of your way, slide it over, bring it up, then put that one all the way to the side, then slide the next one over, bring it up when you check it. It's just, it's a safety thing more than anything else. So there's the queen here and the caretakers around her. Some of them moved away because it's not in the hive. And then this is the queen cell right here. And this one would be a superseding queen because it's not down here. Though technically you could almost say they could have been going either way just because of that hole there, but that one was turned out to be a superseding queen. Queens can lay up to 2,000 eggs a day. Usually it's less. They usually go on 2 mating flights and that's it. The rest of their lives they're in the hive. The drone we've spoke about, they basically have one job and then that's it. We won't go into too much detail with that. Where do you get your bees? You can get them by collecting them somewhere. This is some hive, swarm that was going in and starting to build in these palms. You can also get them like this. Your nook box is the better route, especially when you're starting. You know, this is actually a removal that I did that where they went into somebody's walls. And, bee for bee, you're going to be far better off dealing with a box. This is a slide. It doesn't show real well, but it talks about the different bees. The Italian, I don't even know how you say it, Carniolan or something, Buckfast, Russian, German, and the Caucasian. Ironically, just so you know, Caucasian bees are black. It's kind of, I've just always gotten a laugh out of that. Italians are generally the main bee that people are going to deal with. Buckfast bees are also called ankle biters. That is because they will chew the legs off of the varroa mite, rendering them useless and kill them off. And so I think a lot of people are starting to work that into their stuff. Now, this is actually that day in our backyard. So are there people that can help you? There certainly are. And most of them are in your bee societies. Things that you can do to help would be planting stuff that the bees would like. Farmers are, they're finding putting wildflowers on the edges of their property will help draw the pollinators in. Oh, okay, I didn't lose it. There's a whole ton of information of different types of flowers, plants, things like that that you can plant. And at this point, we're not going to go into that too much. Let's see. The males, okay, we've kind of... Gracious words are like honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. And I forgot to... I know it was in there, but I lost where I had the verse. Okay, so we're going to skip this because we just finished that break. So we're going to just kind of try to go through so we can be done by, I think it's 5 o'clock, right? That we're supposed to be done. So the parable of uncertainty, there's going to be questions. What in the world are we going to do? How am I going to do this? The big question everybody wants to know is that. It was asked, right? How much honey am I going to get? How much honey? General terms, depending on where you are in the country, 30 to 100 pounds. Averaging 60. Here, 100 pounds is not too terribly unusual if it's a good, strong hive. When you get up north, it's not going to be quite that much, depending on what your environment is. If you're sitting in the middle of a massive orchard, in the spring, you're going to get a whole lot, and then you might not get so much later on. What issues may arise? That creature right there, which I think one got killed at the end of the road, sometime last night. But skunks are probably the main thing that are going to go after your bees. They will go after them, and it was described to me as they like them like popcorn. they sit there and they go to the end of your hive and they go until they start coming out, and then they just start eating them. But that's why most people will put their hives that high up off the ground, which is 2 cinder blocks is a good safe distance. 3 is fine too. Or you can do like 2 of them high and then a bench over. You know, there's all sorts of different ways people mount them. The reason they do that is because if a skunk comes along, it's going to have to climb up like this, and it exposes its belly. And they'll come out and sting its belly so they won't bother it. That's why you'll find hives generally not right on the ground. Plus, a lot less pests. You know, a lot less ant issues. What I've actually found that I do, and in a couple pictures you'll see, I've got the cinder blocks the wrong way. I've turned them to where now they're all up this way. The reason I do that is twofold. Wasps will get in there, and wasps are carnivorous and will eat your bees. The other is I can put diatomaceous earth is what you use in a pool. Yeah. If you put the diatomaceous earth inside of these, that will reduce your hive beetles and your ants being as much of an issue. Bear is another one. People in bear country, they usually have it surrounded with electric fence. I mean, what else can you do? Yeah. Yeah, you can't use, generally solar isn't going to be strong enough. You're going to have the high-powered thing that's designed for 10 mile and only use it around your hives, and you should be okay. That's generally what people are doing. I don't know why this picture is with that word, but anyhow. So I've spoke about this. I personally will not do more than 50% of honey ever. I just won't. I have heard of people, and I spoke about this earlier too, so we can pass that up, but it just don't harvest everything and give them sugar water. Just don't do it. You're going to end up killing them. This hive or this frame is not ready to harvest yet. It's very close, and in a matter of a couple of weeks it might be, but if it's not solid white, solid capped, just leave it. It's not worth trying because your moisture content will be too high, so your honey will be no good. It'll ferment. And the bubbles that you're seeing, that I'm telling you about, that are in mine right now, that wouldn't be because of it being freshly poured. It would be because it's fermented. And that's, you know, but I can tell you this is harvested like, you know, not even a week ago and filled into bottles a couple days ago. So that's not the issue with that, but it is what it is. So one of the most important things you can do to help is consider, honestly, when you spray. If you're going to spray something on your farm, do it. If you can do it like a half an hour before sundown, that would make a massive difference compared to even an hour before sundown. Because when you get to close to sundown, most of the bees have come back home. And then by morning, most of that stuff is going to be dry before the bees get back out. And so there are recommendations and suggestions and requirements, depending on what it is. And a lot of that has to do with the bees. This was a sad reality that happened to me. This was not the day that it happened, but this was like this year. And I was like, oh, no, please don't tell me. And I was fine. It was fine. But I literally had hives that were busting into every seam, top, bottom, sides, everything. So I left the property on Sunday, ordered all my equipment, got it, went back up Friday afternoon so that I could basically split all my hives on Sunday, and I had 100% bee kill. 100%. The last remaining 10 bees looked like they had Parkinson's. And it was so disgusting and so sad because all the honey was gone, everything. And I was just so disgusted. I just picked the stuff up because I didn't know how much poison was in what. And I just took it over to the burn pile and burned it up. And that's how they ended in 2017. And that's the reality. It happens. Yeah. All the honey, it was useless. It had poison in it.
I mean, it wasn't gone.
Some of it was gone, which meant that it went to somebody else's hive and did the same thing to their hives. And that's one of the major things that people aren't really seeing happen. They go, oh, a bee, shh, you know. And I've had people call me to help them get bees out of their place, and their bees, you know, they've sprayed. And you just kind of go, I can't do anything about it. Because if I take these back to my apiary, you know, they may not have killed these that are left, but if they have the poison still there and it comes back into my apiary, then I can lose my entire apiary. So it's not worth the risk. Yeah.
I've also had a case where somebody put honey water out for hummingbirds, and the bees just completely just suck it dry. Right?
Yeah.
And then they take that back to their hive. Well, it's not poison, but it's not.
Yeah, but see, that can be fermenting. And if you're using store honey, one of the issues, and I didn't cover it in here, but one of the issues that we run into as a beekeeper is there's a risk of American foul brood. Okay? If that happens to your hive, that's what you are required by law to do. And I'm not talking just the bee frames. I'm talking your entire hive has to be locked down, taken, and burned off, and everything is gone. And you have to start all over again. There is no funny business with that one.
Is there insurance against that?
You can get it. I see two hands. Go ahead.
What's it called?
American foul brood. It's the way that you check it. I can tell you, thank God, I have never seen it. But I've seen videos where you take a toothpick and you stick it in where the brood is and you pull it out, and it's like this spongy, stringy, slimy mess that comes up. And that is the test for American foul brood. And when you have it, that's the only option that you've got. It's a disease, and actually what you were talking about with doing the feeding bees from honey from the store, that's the most common way it gets spread. Because it doesn't affect humans. So if a commercial grower experiences American foul brood, they may not realize it until the honey's already through the system. But it doesn't matter for us because we aren't going to get it. But we can spread it real fast that way. Yeah. Yes. Correct. And generally, they're getting it from all over the entire United States. You know, it's not even, this is southeast, it's not even, this is southwest, this is north. No, it's, here's the United States. Yeah.
I tell everyone I know, so I'll tell you guys, you can tell everyone you know if you don't know already. If you see something that you're, like, people like kill wasps and not bees, but I'd soapy water in a spray bottle.
Yes.
It'll kill them. Like, my husband didn't believe me, and I sprayed one.
Yeah.
Because there was, like, a wasp network.
Yeah. And if I'm dealing with an Africanized hive, I have two options. I can kill it off. If it, you know, we're talking a feral community colony that's existing out somewhere that I'm going to get. I can kill it, and that's the way to do it. You just spray it down with soap water. That way. And then you would want to wash out the comb also, so no honey gets, you know, whatever, soaked up by people, other bees, I mean. Yes, that is an option. The other option is you get them out and you requeen them. But you'd have to decide whether you want to deal with an aggressive hive for the next 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 10 weeks or, you know, till the cycle changes. But It is an option. It is a possibility. And technically, if you go out and get a feral colony, you are in need of replacing that queen. It's not a law that you have to. It's strongly advised, is the way they put it. I determine it by the demeanor of the bees. If the bees are aggressive, there's no doubt. There's no question. If I can rip a hive completely and totally apart and I don't have a bee bothering me at all the entire time, I know it came from a managed hive in that area, and I generally know whose it was and go, okay, these are his bees, there's no doubt, I know them. So, and again, that just emphasizes that. Let's see. So this is just explaining what had happened that time. That's the name I was looking for earlier with the that's in the radiator fluid and in this Roundup and stuff like that. But literally, the guy was telling me he had had the highest yield per acre of peanuts he had ever had in his life on the fields on both sides of me. And I said, well, this is how you rewarded me. You know. So basically, I let him know that what the law was about it and just said, just so you're aware, if it happens again, I'll be reporting it. You know, because he'd get fined $1,500, but I lost many, many, many times that. I mean, because literally everything, I couldn't use any of it at all. A single grain of seven dust, I spoke about this, will kill an entire hive, and they'll go to a Roundup before a flower. You know, the best that it's going to do is cause a hive to be extremely weak, and the most likely is it'll be destroyed. Then what will happen is after that colony dies out, other bees will rob that hive. They'll take that back to their hive, and that cycle just continues on down the line. Thus, colony collapse disorder term came out because they couldn't figure out what's been causing it. This is my opinion. I can't say it on science, but to me, that has got to be what it is. But basically, you know, they're cleaning up. This is actually, this right here is my top bar hive. This is the tree that it came out of, and this is what was remaining. And you can see they're literally going crazy. It's their own honey cleaning it up. There was absolutely no health issues with this hive whatsoever, so I didn't have any issues with letting the bees clean it up. I don't mind doing that with my own bees. Somebody else, that's a whole different story. But literally, that's what it looks like. You've got, you know, thousands and thousands of bees sitting there just going around that. Okay, well, this at least is larger, but it's oriented wrong. But this is, after I was done bottling up, that's my black jar. This is a couple of quarts. I had a little tiny scraping. Instead of me scrubbing it out and throwing it away or taking hot water and making bread, a lot of times I'll just do that because it's honey from my own hives. So I'm not too concerned about it. Some of the pests that you've got to deal with, this is what a frame of wax moth looks like. Wax moth will destroy a hive quickly. There is no doubt about that whatsoever. What do you do? The only thing you can really do, you reduce the opening, keep it reduced. You don't let it be the whole width of the hive. They only want about a 2-inch opening. I have had the entire hive open before with no issues, but play it safe, keep it reduced down. You'll eliminate the robbing. It gives them a small area to guard, and you'll eliminate having this. That generally is from having two little bees in a large area will generally create this. Wax moth, it literally eats wax. They're starting to use it now for eating plastics in landfills and using them for fish bait. That's been the new trend. But they literally will go in there and they'll just eat the wax. This is a hive that I had lost up here, and that was, you know, it didn't take very long for that to happen. But if there was, for that particular hive, I would just end up pulling that plastic out and putting a new piece of plastic and scraping out and freezing the rest. Basically, if there's just a little bit in there, stick it in the freezer for a few days. That kills the wax moth, kills the eggs, kills the everything. You're going to be fine. Then the bees can finish cleaning it up. Another problem you'll come across is cross comb. I think I mentioned that earlier when we were looking at the comb, where it starts on one frame and they come over and build it onto the other frame. That can be an utter, complete, and total mess. I had a hive that the entire super, they built across from frame to frame to frame instead of frame to frame to frame to frame. That was a nightmare, and it made a huge mess, but it got cleaned up. They just periodically they'll do it. There's no rhyme or reason. It was open frames, so that I didn't have the plastic there to guide them. That's why most beekeepers will use that. What you can do with that is if you want to have a frame that is natural comb, what I would probably do is take your comb that does not have the lining on it and put it in between frames like that. Then that will tell them, okay, I need to build just across like that. That'll at least guide them in the right direction. You still might get some cross comb, but it shouldn't be as much. There's no guarantee they're going to do what they want to do. It can be all sorts of things. It can be, if it's feral, it's going to happen more commonly than if it's not. And that's another reason to kind of be dealing with those. Let's see. Okay. Oh, yeah, this, I think that last thing, I think I have a picture of this in here too. But this is like the inside. That's basically ideal for a top bar, how that should look. Another item is that's a more common one that everybody's going to deal with is small hive beetle. Seems like it's going to be on almost any hive anywhere. It's just a matter of how much. You get enough of it, and you've got this. And that is nothing. That's garbage. You don't want to do anything with that whatsoever. It's fermented slime. It's, yeah. And that's why putting the blocks with the opening up, filling it with diatomaceous earth, what happens in this thing's life cycle is the eggs will, they'll lay the eggs, those will drop to the bottom of the hive, drop underneath, burrow into the ground, turn into a beetle, and come back up. So putting that diatomaceous earth down there, it's like putting knives on them, and it'll kill them. And then there's the varroamite again. The varroamite, I think part of the reason why it's getting as bad as it has in the United States, I still can kind of throw that back towards chemical uses, because I think that our bees have become weaker and weaker from what I've seen. I have not seen the strength of the bees that I've seen 4 years ago everywhere. Still, there's a few of them that I'm starting to see they're getting back there, but still nothing like what even 4 years ago I saw. So for varroamite, I'm going to tell you, search that one out, because there's a whole lot of different opinions of what to do and how to treat for it. And some are organic, some are not. Some are organic, but they tell you wear gloves, wear mask, face shield, the whole shebang, cover up from head to toe. And you're going to give that to your bees? You know, you're going to put this in your hive? So just look up the different options for that when it comes down to it. Yeah.
When I was doing it, they were advertising, and I tried to use frames for drones.
Yes.
Because your mites will...
They'll go to there first, yes. Yes, that's correct, because the drones are larger. And so they'll generally go to the drones. And when there's been one time when the inspector was out, and of all the years I've been doing the bees so far, which isn't that terribly many, I've only seen one varroa mite, and that was it. But as a safety precaution, I did treat my hives accordingly and stuff like that. And actually, this right here, everybody know what it is? I'm thinking everybody in here, most everybody in here is old enough. That's a flour sifter. Put powdered sugar in that and take your hive. And I can tell you there's people that will not do this, and I can tell you because they consider you're adding sugar to your honey, okay? But if you take the powdered sugar and you go like this, what they're going to do is it's going to get all over the bee. And then all the other bees are going to come along and they're going to start grooming the other bees to clean it off. When they clean it off, the varroa mites fall, and once they fall and they're out of the hive, that's it. They're gone. They can't come back in. So, yeah, yeah. And that is a method that that I know some people that have zero mites, and that's what they use. And when I was talking to somebody about it, they're like, yeah, but they're putting sugar in their honey. I'm like, okay, so is that better than putting in the acid burn in there? Or putting acid strips in there that say remove all the honey before you do this, because if you do this, you can have this happen? You know, you don't want to put this poison. You know, you're going to give it to your bees, but you don't want to put this poison in your honey. You know, there's a product that Bayer is working on, but isn't okayed for the U.S. yet, that is something of interest.
Bayer,
like as in Bayer aspirin?
Yeah, you know who that is.
Yes, I know. It's an interesting concept is what I'm saying. I don't know if it works yet or not. But it's only available overseas. And it's actually an entrance device where the bees will go through that entrance device, and in so doing, it takes care of the mite. And it's supposedly some micro amount of something or other that is fine, and, you know, you can leave your supers on. You don't have to worry about it. It's just something of interest, and I've sent the information and asked the Florida Bee Lab, which is right here in Gainesville, but I haven't heard about it. One of the other things I've been pondering, and I haven't talked to them yet, is how much brushing does it take for it to come off of a bee? So I haven't played with that much, but I'm wondering if that same concept with a camel hair might work. I don't know. So anyhow, that's just stuff I was thinking. So your rewards, you can see that's some nice, good, clean, clear honey. That was right before it went into a show. Then we showed this at the beginning. This is where it was supposed to go. And your crops will generally yield larger, as much as 25% has been documented. I cannot promise you that. And about 70% of the bees are shipped off from all over the United States to California for almond pollination. When they come back, they're generally healthier. If they're left there too long, then they end up dead because of spraying for the almond trees. Because as soon as the bees are done, they start spraying. To them, it's too much money. And then there's your rewards, is what you end up getting with your honey. In Florida, hive-wise, that got small. Hive-wise, you can end up with, I'm going to read this to you just to give an idea, 1/4 acre, 3 colonies. These numbers are doubled for during swarm season. 1/4 acre to 1/2 acre is 6. 1/2 acre to 1 acre is 10. 1 acre to 2.5, 15. 2.5 to 5 is 25. 5 to 10 is 50. After that, it's basically unlimited, but you have to be within 150 feet of your property edge. So there comes a point where, I mean, literally I have 20 acres. If I wanted, I could have 10,000 beehives there. Do I want 10,000 beehives? No. I want a few beehives for pollinating my orchard. I'm not worried about the rest. The fees for up to 5 is $10, up to 40 is 20, up to 200 is, or 20, then 40 at 200, up to 500 is 70, and over 500 colonies is $100 a year. So in Florida, you're not talking a lot of money And I can tell you, your bee inspector can be your absolute best friend. They are, at least here in Florida, they are unreal helps. You come across an issue, like when this bee kill happened, I sent a note to my inspector up here as well as in Deltona to let them know, look, you don't need to bother coming out. This is what happened. She called me up within probably 30 minutes and spent 2 hours on the phone with me about it. I mean, you don't get, and I paid $10 a year for this at the time. It's like, you know, so yeah. But generally, definitely start with a local bee club. Learn from the people that are in your direct area. And most of all, get started. Even if it's a single hive, that's fine. You're going to be better off with two hives just because then you can compare what's going on. You know, it'll work easier with two. You'll be happier because then if something happens to one and it needs help, you can get help from the other. Did I miss the first part of that verse? I think I did. Okay. So, in a low land flowing with milk and honey, that expression is used 18 times in the Old Testament. So, you know, I'm not advocating drinking milk and I'm not advocating eating just honey, but hey, it is a scripture verse. So if you search on Facebook for SDA beekeepers, you're going to find a group that I did set up that we can all continue communicating with each other. My card's up here. I'm going to be over at the booth when we're at the booth, when the booths are open. And I'll be happy to give you whatever information I can help you. You can always email me, text me, call. Calling if I'm at the farm is pretty difficult at times. It's just the way it is. The House of Israel called manna. I've always wondered what this tastes like, and I'm looking forward to trying it. So feel free to ask anything that you have about honey, questions about bees. I will say, for example, you don't see that branch, but this is actually the one. The hive is right there, right up in there. That's how high up I had to go. I was not comfortable. I do not like heights. So, and these are just kind of like some extra slides that I have in here. That's a swarm that's building a colony. They look dangerous, but they really aren't. That's, you know, they're just trying to find a place to go. This is probably after this accident, and so they're just trying to find somewhere to land. You know, there's crazy things people do. You're not going to find me doing it. I don't mind dealing with bees, but I am not going to go nuts. You know, if you want to put honey on yourself and you want to have bees flying all over you, go for it. I understand there's a lady that's what she wears when she goes out, is bees. I'm not that way. So, and then there's a whole bunch of different plants. I've got some stuff, but that has some information. It'd probably be easier to email it to everybody at this point. I went to go print some stuff and my printer wasn't working. This is actually that is a regular trash can. The guy opened it up to throw his trash in there, and it was literally filled with bees. So, but that's...
How long does it take to
get like that? There's no bee in there that's over, other than the queen, that's going to be over 3 months, three months old. I mean, in anything in here. There's nothing in there that's going to be over 3 months old. Yeah. Well, it happened probably the night before, and he took his trash out, and there was bees in there, so he called the city. The city gave him my number. So, yeah. And, yes, you will potentially be getting stung. But you can see what I was talking about earlier, and you were like, about how it rips out the whole backside of them. This is basically the entire venom sac. And when that comes out, the bee's going to die. A honeybee cannot sting and sting and sting and sting, unless it's the queen. But a wasp can, and yellow jackets can. And that's why yellow jackets and hornets and stuff like that, when people call about them, I'm like, nope. You call pest control, they come out, they'll take care of you. So, anyhow, but that gets us to about the time that we're supposed to be at. So we were able to breeze through the last part. So if you've got any questions, feel free to ask them. If you want to look at stuff and ask questions about what you see, feel free. This piece here? This is actually a honey strainer. What I will usually do when I turn the frames upside down is I'll collect it into a bucket, and then I will open the valve or into whatever I've collected in. I'll let it drip through these. This is basically just two different screens, different sizes. Then after that, I will let it go through. Where did I put it? I'll let it go through this, and I never heat it up. So in essence, what I end up doing is I strain it, I guess you could say. And this is I think it's a 200 micron, just to make sure that any little chunks of wax don't get into my bottles. So I do go through the process of just letting it go through this very slowly. And that's just to catch any little thing that I might have missed. After it goes into that, then it sits in the 5-gallon bucket, and that has a little valve on it, and then I just open and close it and put it in. But yeah, and you know, since I've already don't have the foam in there, I don't really have to deal with the foam that you normally have to. 2 days, I usually don't have any foam on mine at all. Yeah. The bees actually, you know what? That is a picture I should have put in there. Thank you for reminding me. I'm going to have to send myself a note. The wax is actually, for lack of a better way to put it, it almost looks like bees sweating. In the abdomen, they have little joints. Let me see. Oh, here. This will work. Okay. You see these little joints right here? Is it showing up out there? They will gorge themselves, and they will actually push wax out of that seam. It's the strangest thing. I could not get anybody to give me a picture they had of that happening, and I meant to put it in here. And that was one of the things that I totally forgot to do. But yeah, it's look it up online. It is really pretty weird when you think about this. And these are creatures that people think have evolved from nothing, basically. I mean, it's like there is no way. I mean, just looking at the stinger on the queen alone makes no sense with evolution, you know?
So you said at one stage of their life is wax-based.
Do
they form the wax?
Yeah. Yeah, they both. They'll make it and form it. They'll make it and chew it up and form it into the shape they need, yeah. Yeah, I have, this last year I made my first 3 dipped candles for the fair. This is not cleaned wax. This is still quote unquote classified as dirty wax. But here, I'll pass around a couple of these. You guys can look at it. If you look at the one side, it's clean. The other side, it's dirty. And that's because this wax has not been filtered yet. Which basically would mean running it through something like this. But what's that? Oh, did you find one? Okay. So this, let's see. Okay. Yeah. So that's what it looks like when they create the wax. And this is something people think just like happened by chance. You know, I mean, these things that are producing and helping produce 70% of the food that we eat, and it's going to be more than that as vegetarian or vegan. And, you know, supposedly, you know, things like this just happen. I
heard it takes 7 pounds of honey to make a pound of wax or something.
Yeah, yeah, it is an incredible amount, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, amazing.
Uh-huh. Wow. Yeah. Isn't that neat? Thank you. But yeah, it's, you know, when I grew up in Maryland. I was in the heart of Seventh-day Adventist country, basically, I guess. And I'd never heard the term Seventh-day Adventist till I was 18. And it wasn't until my first son was born that my dad said, "Oh, you know, when I was a kid, I was born here." I'm like, "You were?" He says, "Yeah, I was born here." I'm like, "Okay, at the Washington Adventist Hospital." And I said, "Really?" And he says, "Yeah." He says, "You know, my mom would, it didn't matter how far away it was, she wouldn't take us to any hospital unless it was an Adventist hospital. She studied with Adventists, da 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 da." I'm like, "Dad, then why did I never hear the term Seventh-day Adventist growing up? You know, why did this truth never get to me until I was 18? You know, and I'm the only Adventist in my family, but evidently my grandmother had a tremendous amount of respect for Seventh-day Adventists. And, you know, it's just never came up at the house. So anyway, just a funny little story for you. But yeah. Yeah.
And obviously the pollinating and the wax.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to wrap my head around, I know you have to go after it every couple weeks.
Yeah.
But like, so if you want the wax, I'm trying to figure out, so I get that they build it. How do you get the wax?
Okay.
And how
my suggestion, and this is why people use different types of things for different types of things, okay? There's a frame just like this with a little strip, ideally with a little strip across here, because this is not what they will always do. Sometimes they will just build all the way to the edge and build out and not build right in the middle. So you put a little wood strip across this piece, but this is going to be your best bet for getting literal wax.
What's the name of it?
This is just an open frame. I mean, it's a standard frame just without that yellow insert. You don't have the plastic foundation piece in it. And then you can get the honey out, and you can just break this wax off and melt it. You just keep the temperature, it's under, I can look in my notes I have at home, but I think it's 125 degrees. Yeah, yeah, it's right around that point. You don't want to get it too hot. And beeswax, when it burns for candles, doesn't smoke. And that's why it used to be what they would use in the churches was all beeswax because of that. So, yeah. But this would be, you can also use the other type, but and then you just have to, after you're done with it, you just have to scrape it off. And I would probably take it out. If you kept bees, I would probably take it out after you get your honey. I would probably set it out there for let the bees clean it up. So that way you don't have all that extra honey. As long as you know it's from your own bees, you know it's okay honey, you know there's no issues in the hive, then I would do that.
You've got one in your hive, plus all the other ones that will have honey.
This, yeah, but it's, if you're going to make a candle, it's going to take quite a bit. It will, you might be initially easier buying wax from like a place like the Dent, where they sell it by the pound. I mean, it is an option, but it will take a while. I will tell you, I have been beekeeping for a lot of years now, not a lot, but maybe, let's say I'm on my fifth year-ish. I have no clue what that is. Somewhere around my fifth year, and I've just now been able to make 3 candles.
Oh.
And that includes getting feral colonies that I couldn't do anything with the wax because it was all balled up and off into different twists and turns and branches and things like that. So it takes a while to get that kind of quantity of wax. Yeah, so just be knowing that now rather than going, "Oh, I'm going to make candles next year with the wax from my hive." It's going to be a while. You know, I might now have maybe 4 or 5 pounds of wax total. Maybe. So, yeah. Yeah. It's like one of those little, not crock pots, but yeah, and it got about maybe that much in it. Like a little Fry Daddy unit. That's about what I have. Not even half full. Yeah. So I don't want to discourage you, but I also don't want to make you think you're going to have something that you won't.
Wax is just a byproduct.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very handy one. You can use it to lubricate things. You can use it to fix things, to coat things. Some people actually will melt it down and they'll use it as the paint to give your hive a natural look. And it's coated and protected, yeah. So, yeah.
One thing I have done when I take a frame out and I want the bees to clean it up, I've always been afraid of bees causing to rot.
Yes.
What I do is I take an empty box, put it on top of the hive, and put those empties in there. And
okay. I usually just set them on something out, way away from the hives. And I will tell you, like the foam that I was talking about that I got from this this batch of honey that I just did for being here because I didn't have enough honey of my own. I took that and I put it out. And I will tell you that when I came back last night, probably let's say around 10:30 or 11 when I went out to go get my display hive right here, there were a ton of dead bees inside of there because what they did is they all got in there and were fighting over it. And so that does happen. Some of them will drown in stuff like that. So that's why they say, like, if you're going to put it out, put out rocks. And this I thought was shallow enough, but I still probably had a, I'm guessing maybe 100 or so dead bees in it. You know, so I mean, that is the reality. The chances are they were already at the point where that was going to be happening to them anyway. But that, yes, robbing can be a huge issue, and it can create a big problem. And if you were to try to, that's why I like this. This is actually for a feeder. You see the little teeny holes in there. That if you want to put sugar syrup, your best thing to do is to get the type of lid that has a hole in the top that you can put it like this and put a box around it and a cover. A lot of people will take and put it in like this, and then it will go right in the front of the hive right here. The problem with that is it encourages robbing. And the last thing, that's really about the last thing that you want to have actually starting to happen, because then you can have a real nightmare on your hands to deal with.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.